almost every single person I've asked, smart people, have said, of course we believe we can get back to 3% growth.
Senator Dan Sullivan defends the tax plan as the debate continues in Washington. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Friday, December 1st. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, the state will get unexpected millions from Primera after fewer insurance claims by Alaskans.
We believe this was the right thing to do, given the importance of the Alaska Reinsurance Program and really for the ongoing stability of the state's individual health insurance marketplace.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Colder temperatures are here, and the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation reminds you of the danger of carbon monoxide, a poisonous gas that you can't see or smell. If it builds up in your home, it can be deadly. Be safe this winter and have a qualified mechanic ensure your heating system is working properly. Never run your car in the garage or operate a portable generator in an enclosed space. Finally, always ensure your home has a working carbon monoxide detector. This message sponsored by AHFC.
In Washington, U.S. senators are still debating a bill to cut taxes and repeal the mandate that everyone have health insurance. The bill would also open part of the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge to oil drilling. For more, we turn to Alaska Public Media's Washington correspondent, Liz Ruskin. Hi, Liz.
Hi, Lori.
Liz, is this taking longer than was expected?
Yes. And we did actually expect it to pass last night. There were concerns about how much this would add to the deficit. And then all day, the Republican leadership has been trying to holed up in Senator McConnell's office trying to work out the concerns about the deficit and the impact on the deficit and different taxes that senators wanted changed. And so, consequently, all day, the Democrats have been on the floor of the Senate complaining how there's no bill, there's no bill.
So, assuming this bill does pass tonight, what's next?
In theory, the House could take this bill, the Senate's bill, and just pass it, and that would send it on to the president for his signature. But that doesn't usually happen. So, instead, the bill will go to a conference committee, composed of senators and House members. We believe Senator Murkowski will be on that conference committee, and that's where they hammer out the differences between the Senate bill and the version the House passed. And then the final bill that they work out, the compromise bill, it goes back to both chambers and has to be passed again.
So the Arctic Refuge part is still in this bill now, Liz. Could it be dropped in the conference committee?
Yes, in theory it could, but I actually don't see that happening because I'm not seeing any lawmakers, at least no senators, who are saying, oh, to get my vote on this package, you're going to have to drop the Arctic Refuge drilling part. It's just not come up this year in that way. The Arctic Refuge drilling part is in the bill now, and it calls for a 50-50 split of revenues instead of the 90-10 that many Alaskans believe it should be. It seems to be moving right along with the tax bill. So if the tax bill passes, I think this could actually open the Arctic Refuge to oil drilling. It's hard to believe after all these years of living through this issue that it could actually happen, but it does seem quite close.
All right, Liz, thanks so much for watching this debate for us.
Sure.
That was Alaska Public Media's Washington correspondent, Liz Ruskin, reporting from the Capitol. Both of Alaska's senators support the Republican tax cuts, and on Thursday, Senator Sullivan ardently defended them to Alaska reporters. Citing his faith in the growth potential of the national economy, Sullivan says the Senate tax bill won't add as much to the national debt as the Congressional Budget Office and other analysts predict. Sullivan says he has higher expectations for the rate of economic growth.
The Obama administration left saying, hey, we did as good as we could, 1.5%, 2%. That's the new normal. That's America hitting on all cylinders. I fundamentally reject that, and all kinds of economists do.
As a senator, Sullivan says he's been able to meet with dozens of business people and economists, and he says he asks all of them about GDP growth.
And almost every single person I've asked, smart people, have said, of course, we believe we can get back to 3% growth.
But as Sullivan spoke, another report, this one by Nonpartisan Joint Committee on Taxation, emerged. It concludes the tax cuts won't fuel enough growth to pay for themselves and would increase budget deficits by about $1 trillion. The Joint Committee acts as a referee for Congress, and its report slowed the Senate's momentum on the tax bill Thursday. Sullivan says in addition to tax cuts, it will take permitting reform and a military buildup in Alaska to boost GDP growth. 10 nations, including the U.S. and Russia, have agreed to ban commercial fishing in the central Arctic Ocean for at least 16 years. Delegates from 5 Arctic nations were joined by China, Japan, South Korea, Iceland, and the EU to negotiate the terms of the agreement in Washington, D.C. this week. It specifically prevents commercial fishing in 1.1 million square miles of the Arctic Ocean, allowing time to study the region's resources. And to do that, the agreement establishes a joint scientific research and monitoring program. Its aim is to better understand the ecosystem and to determine whether sustainable fish stocks could be harvested in the Arctic Ocean in the future. The 5 Arctic nations involved signed a similar moratorium in 2015. That one, however, did not involve major fishing nations like China and Japan, both of which have the capability to trawl in the Arctic's high seas. Once the new agreement is signed, the ban will be in place for 16 years. After that, it will automatically be extended every 5 years unless a signatory country objects. Primera Blue Cross Blue Shield of Alaska has agreed to pay the state government $25 million because patients filed fewer claims this year than the company expected. State Division of Insurance Director Lori Wing-Heyer says the payment will offset nearly half of the $55 million cost of the Alaska Reinsurance Program.
With the claims taking the nosedive that they have and the reinsurance money that was appropriated by the legislature, it was right for both parties to come to an agreement.
State law says that insurance rates can't be excessive, but by the time Primera projected that insurance claims would be lower than expected, the company had already set its rates. Primera is the only insurer that remains on the state's individual insurance market. Alaskans who earn too much to receive federal subsidies pay the highest individual and family insurance rates in the nation. More than 4 out of 5 Alaskans receive the subsidies. The state started the reinsurance program to make the market more stable. The federal government has agreed to pay the state $322 million in reinsurance over the next 5 years. Wing-Heyer says the state expected to pay between $11 and $15 million per year. The money from Primera will help lower that. Wing-Heyer says it's a mystery why people submitted fewer claims to the company.
And they certainly, right or wrong, were not obligated to do this. But they recognized it and came forward.
Primera spokeswoman Melanie Kuhn says the payment strengthens insurance in Alaska.
We believe this was the right thing to do, given the importance of the Alaska Reinsurance Program and really for the ongoing stability of the state's individual health insurance marketplace.
Primera has lowered its premiums for next year. In 2018, Alaska's premiums will no longer be the country's highest. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a determined woman on a composting mission in Juneau.
And so I pull up to people's houses, grab their bucket, dump the contents in my truck, and then leave their bucket at the curb.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
Alaska Humanities Forum grants support creative projects that share the stories of Alaska and explore what it means to be Alaskan. Get details and apply at akhf.org. This message sponsored by Alaska Humanities Forum.
A program mixing Alaska Native art with high school math is part of Sea Alaska Heritage Institute's latest efforts to promote culture and foster the next generation of Native artists. The partnership seeks to encourage artists in the Northwest Coast art traditions of Tlingit, Haida, and Tsimshian. Sea Alaska Heritage Institute, the University of Alaska Southeast, and several Southeast school districts have signed on. Funded by a federal grant, Sea Alaska Heritage is calling the program Sharing Our Box of Treasures. Partners will work to incorporate the geometry and algebra concepts involved in form line design into high school math classes. It also establishes an associate's degree program in Northwest Coast Arts at UAS. The goal is for students studying Native art at UAS to then be able to transfer to the Institute of American Indian Arts in Santa Fe, New Mexico, to complete four-year degrees. UAS spokesperson Kenny Campbell says the partnership is a continuation of one that began last year.
It's a way that, you know, we may not be able to offer the full four-year degree, but by offering the two-year degree, it creates a pathway for someone who's interested in that topic.
At the same time, high school students in Juneau, Hoonah, and Klawak will eventually be able to take courses in form line design at their schools while receiving dual credit at UAS. The Juneau School District and UAS will be hiring coordinators to start working on classes next spring. The Cook Inlet Aquaculture Association walked back a contentious plan to move most of a hatchery operation further into Ketchmack Bay State Park recently. The association currently operates the Tutka Bay Hatchery in a lagoon connected to Tutka Bay near Homer, and the facility is permitted to release up to 100 million pink salmon at both the lagoon and the head of the bay. The Hatchery Association planned to begin releasing most of those fish in the spring of 2018, but board members voted to take a cautious approach, bringing the total release down to 16 million due to concerns over survival rates and operational costs. KBBI's Aaron Bolton has more.
Cook Inlet Aquaculture's plan was to release about 80% of the fish raised in Tutka Bay Lagoon, about 4 miles away at the head of Tutka Bay. Some area residents have fought the move. Questions have been raised over ecological concerns and the operation moving further into Ketchmack Bay State Park. Area resident Nancy Hillstrand and owner of Coal Point Trading Company in Homer has been a vocal opponent of the plan.
We don't need to create a predator pit right there at the head of Tutka. If we want any of our really high-valued fisheries to come back, we really shouldn't be releasing such a biomass of predators up there.
The Hatchery Association has 1 year left on a three-year permit to release fish at the site. And Cook Inlet Aquaculture Executive Director Gary Fondry says the association has waited to make the change due to operational concerns and not because of public opinion. The association wants to move the release site due to difficulty harvesting fish in the extremely tidal lagoon and because of low oxygen levels killing fish during low tide cycles.
When we were originally panning up the fish, we had all these other returning fish. The dissolved oxygen levels were dropping and killing the fish in the pens. Now the fish, as Mark Roth pointed out, have the ability to move in and out of the lagoon. We're not having that threat.
That's Malcolm Milne, a Cook Inlet commercial fisherman who sits on Cook Inlet Aquaculture's Hatchery Committee. Milne told the board Saturday it should approve the committee's recommendation and proceed cautiously.
We don't know what's going to happen when we move the fish out there. We don't know what the survival rates are going to be. And at the Hatchery Committee meeting, we felt it was prudent to take a small portion of our fish, try it out, and see what the effects are going to be.
Most of the board agreed due to the cost of investing in new net pens for the site and because of increased production in Tutka Bay Lagoon. The hatchery now collects eggs from fish in a freshwater creek near the hatchery instead of keeping returning fish in pens. That has allowed fish to leave when oxygen levels get low. The hatchery has also waited until fish get larger before releasing them, nearly tripling the number of pinks returning to the lagoon. President Brent Johnson says rising marine survival rates have changed the conversation.
This last year is going to be around 6%. That's real good, and that was done out of the lagoon, and it's reflective of the freshwater egg take that we just started to do. And so I was concerned that we are changing something significant again after having just changed to the freshwater egg take, moving the fish out into the bay.
Other members wanted to move full steam ahead despite the numbers in the lagoon. Board member Steve Vanek made a motion to release no less than 40 million pinks at the head of the bay. But the motion was swiftly defeated and the board approved the Hatchery Committee's recommendation. Hillstrand says she opposes the operation moving further into the state park regardless of the numbers. but it remains to be seen if the smaller footprint at the head of Tucka will appease others who are against the plan. Cook Inlet Aquaculture plans to move two net pens to the new release site for 6 weeks in late March or April. It plans to use different thermal markings for fish released at the head of the bay in order to compare survival rates between the two sites. Reporting in Homer, I'm Aaron Bolton.
The native village of Port Hyden is getting closer to opening a local fish processing plant. The idea is to give area fishermen an opportunity to fish locally during early and late salmon runs. KDLG's Avery Lill has more.
Right here is going to be two freezer units, and then that's going to be where they box it up.
Jimmy Christensen is a commercial fisherman from Port Hyden. He's standing in what the village hopes will soon be a fully operational fish processing plant. There are still stacks of construction equipment inside, but the walls are painted and the building looks nearly finished. The target is to have all the renovations complete and the freezers installed in time for the 2018 salmon season. The Meshick Processing Center is funded largely through the Bristol Bay Economic Development Corporation and through the village itself. Adrienne Christensen is a consultant with the native village of Port Hyden. She says the village has high hopes for this endeavor.
The hope is that we can have a longer fishing season that's not as hectic, and the hope is that we can pay our fishermen higher and more fair per pound for their fish, and that our workers get paid a decent amount, and that those dollars will stay in Port Hyden.
The village anticipates that with 6 to 8 workers, the plant will be able to process 10,000 pounds per day at max capacity. Adrienne Christensen says that they are marketing the fish within the U.S.
We've had a lot of chefs. We've had people that are just really interested in getting a good product, individuals. We've had interest from a lot of different demographics, but it's all U.S.
Currently, the handful of permit holders from Port Hyden mostly fish in Ugashik for a month during peak sockeye season. The goal of the Meshick Fish Processing Plant is to provide a market for these fishermen during the shoulder seasons from May to September. This year's operation may be shorter as the village works out the kinks of running a new business. Jimmy Christensen is one of the fishermen looking forward to being on the water longer and closer to home. Fishing silvers was something he used to do from Port Hyden over a decade ago when more frequent air freight service allowed him to ship fish out more easily.
We used to get anywhere between 20 and 40,000 pounds apiece of silvers. That's a big income for per person for a village. I mean, and whoever they hire, crew, and now we don't have it. And so this would be a big improvement for us.
Adrienne Christensen says that it will be several years before the plant turns a profit. But when it does, the tribally owned business will put the proceeds back into services for the Port Hyden community. In Port Hyden, I'm Avery Lill.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Alaska Pipeline Service Company, operating the 800-mile Trans-Alaska Pipeline since 1977.
And by
Wells Fargo, offering financial tools to start, run, and grow a business. Learn more at wellsfargoworks.com. Do you need health insurance but think you can't afford it? Alaska's health insurance premiums are going down for 2018. If you need insurance or currently have insurance through the individual market, be sure to shop at healthcare.gov between November 1st and December 15th to confirm that you have the plan that best meets your family's budget and coverage needs. For local assistance, call 1-844-PLANS-AK. This message sponsored by the Alaska Division of Insurance.
Ketchikan,
Kotzebue,
Dillingham,
Sitka,
Chugiak,
Fairbanks,
Fort Yukon,
Wrangell,
Barrow,
Unalaska, Dutch Harbor,
Alaknarechamut.
This is AK on Alaska News Nightly. I'm Dave Waldron. This week on AK, compost. Compostable waste makes up nearly a quarter of the trash that ends up in Juneau's landfill, but the food scraps, green waste, and other organic material could be put to better use. KTOO's Jacob Resnick reports on a small Juneau startup that's demonstrating just how that can be done.
Juneau Compost is largely a woman and her truck kind of operation. It's Lisa Doherty and a green Chevy pickup with a finicky ignition switch.
This just started happening this past week and I'm like, oh no, oh yeah, whew.
Each Friday, the commercial fisherman and small business owner drives from one end of Juneau's road system to the other, collecting compost bins set out by her customers.
And so I pull up to people's houses, grab their bucket, dump the contents in my truck, and then leave their bucket at the curb.
This is her first year in business. Households and businesses collect their compostables and pay a monthly fee for Doherty to haul it away. Juno's landfill accepts conventional recyclables such as aluminum cans and plastics, but food waste otherwise gets lumped in with the rest of the trash. Doherty says it doesn't have to be that way.
Community composting is something that goes on all over the country, and it's actually shocking that it hasn't happened here yet.
Most of her clients already pay for curbside trash and recycling pickup, so why pay for another service? For one, it's keeping material out of the landfill. Juno's privately run dump is projected to fill up in the next 20 years. That may seem like a long time, but finding another site won't be easy. Juno has even talked about shipping its waste south, as five other southeast cities do. The city is working on a diversion strategy. Juno's solid waste coordinator, Jim Pinor, says composting food scraps makes sense on a number of levels.
Diverting that waste stream from going into a landfill, and that's a huge benefit. Another benefit is to actually compost it into a marketable product or a usable, beneficial use product, namely being, you know, a good topsoil.
Juno Compost is already working the topsoil production angle. At an 8-acre property in an area north of town, Doherty unloads the day's pickups. Under a tarp, there's a compost heap she's been tending since her operation started in April. She produces something that resembles an oversized meat thermometer to take its temperature.
So your compost pile is alive. It's full of billions of organisms per gram. It's crazy. And so basically, when you create the right sort of environment, all those bacteria are colonizing, and they're working, and they're producing heat.
The 131-degree temperature is enough to kill pathogens, making it safe to handle. Eventually, the bacteria breaks down the food waste into a dark, mealy material called humus. It takes months to mature and smells faintly sweet. Plants love it.
It looks like soil. It's high in organic matter. It's full of nutrients. And it's definitely a good nitrogen boost. And you can use it as a growing medium. So like when I make new raspberry breads, I mix in compost, sand, and seaweed. And that's it. I don't buy topsoil or get bagged topsoil or anything.
Doherty tallies how much compostable waste is collected from each client. That tally will eventually be a credit towards nutrient-rich mix she'll sell for home gardens. Of course, her operation doesn't approach the scale envisioned by municipal planners, but it demonstrates that it works in Juneau. And that's already earning praise.
I think it's wonderful what Juno Compost is doing.
Darren Snyder works with the University of Alaska Fairbanks Cooperative Extension Service in Juneau.
And Lisa has provided essentially a truth and concept that people will participate and people will pay to participate. And it certainly is doable. There's no question that we can compost our waste here.
He sees composting as a moral imperative.
We can turn this stuff into something that's beneficial, and it just should be done. I don't know how else to put it.
The capital city's privately run landfill takes in about 32,000 tons of garbage annually. Less than a year into her operation, Lisa Doherty's personally diverted about 12 tons of compost from the landfill. But she says volume isn't everything.
Small-scale composting like this is happening all over the country, and even in the middle of New York City. You know, and so it really works for people. It brings people together. It's not some scary biodigester. You know, it's like, oh, what is that machine? I don't have knowledge. I can't do it. Well, people can put stuff in a bucket and visualize their neighbor pouring the bucket into a bin.
Now, Juno's municipal-run recycling program is looking to get into the composting game. It could add a drop-off site for the community's green waste. That could help landfill diversion in a big way. Composting may be finally taking off in Juneau. For AK, I'm Jacob Resnick.
Now it's time for 49 Voices. Today we're hearing from Don Allen aboard the ferry, the MV Columbia. Allen's been the officer's board and room steward there for 14 years.
Why am I here? It's because we love the job. That's number one. Officers' board and room steward, we basically take care of the officers' quarters upstairs, make sure their bed's made, towels stocked, heads clean, take care of their public areas. Then I take care of the public areas for the crew down below. Showers down the hall, I make sure those are all clean. The linen lockers are all stocked up. Break room's habitable. Laundry room's not going to catch fire. That's what I basically do. You do your work all on one week. We'll do an 84-hour work week. and then we're off for a week. So you have time to pursue your other interests. I'm a firefighter and EMT with Capital City Fire and Rescue in Juneau. I'm a grandfather. I love to hunt and fish. That's why I came to Alaska. And I've got a dachshund. So that's a pretty full plate right there. On board right now, we have military that are leaving Alaska from going off to a different station. We've got several retirees on board. Before we hit Juneau, we were wall-to-wall packed with high school kids. Paint us yellow, call us the magic school bus. One of my jobs in case of an emergency is to hunt for lost kids. I try to get face-to-face with every kid on board and get him to know that I'm friendly. We had a young lady who had lost her mother this morning. Just take her to the purser's counter, page the mom, give him something to play with behind the purser's counter. I let her help me empty the trash. And tell mom and dad gets with them. If you want to know what you're doing in the morning when you wake up, go somewhere else. If you want to have an interesting time and you're willing to stretch out and grow, come here. I'll teach you. We'll train you.
Don Allen works on the ferry, the MV Columbia. 49 Voices is AK's attempt to put every Alaskan on the radio. Thanks for listening to AK this week. We had help from Jacob Resnick and Vikram Patel. Tune in next week for more unique stories from around the state. I'm Dave Waldron.
That's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. Tonight's stories can be found at our website, alaskapublic.org. We had reports tonight from Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C., Emily Russell in Anchorage, Andrew Kitchenman and Adeline Baxter in Juneau, Aaron Bolton in Homer, and Avery Lill in Dillingham. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron, Wesley Early is our web editor, and I'm Lori Townsend. Have a great weekend.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible in part by your local public radio station.
4 out of 5 Alaskans addicted to heroin started by using prescription opioids. Common opioids include hydrocodone, oxycodone, morphine, fentanyl, and codeine. Safely getting rid of unused opioid medications prevents anyone from taking them without permission, which could endanger them and lead to consequences with law enforcement. Find out more at opioids.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the State of Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
The Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education offers the Alaska Supplemental Education Loan for students attending most college or training programs in or outside of Alaska, and it offers interest rates lower than the Federal Plus. For more information, call 800-441-2962 or visit acpe.alaska.gov/radio. This message sponsored by the Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education, Alaska's higher education state agency.
From one end of Alaska to the other and everywhere in between, public media works to provide quality programming and statewide news you can count on and news you can trust. Whether you're listening at home, at work, or in the car, we're grateful to be a part of your day. Thank you for tuning in. This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.